Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm A. Burton Shuford, Counsel for Stanley & Campbell, Chapter 7 Trustee for ESA Environmental Specialist, Inc. And we are here today on the trustee's appeal, the grant of summary judgment in the favor of Hanover. Your Honors, this is a classic preference case. We're here only because Hanover has cleverly asserted creative, novel, and unfortunately fundamentally flawed and inconsistent defenses. On May 17, 2007, the debtor ESA Environmental Specialist transferred $1.375 million out of its bank accounts to SunTrust Bank to establish a letter of credit for the benefit of Hanover Insurance Company, the defendant and the appellee. On August 1, 2007, less than 90 days after the date of that transfer, ESA filed for bankruptcy, Chapter 11. On August 6, some 5 days after the bankruptcy filing, Hanover withdrew all the funds from the letter of credit. Your Honor, this is a classic case of a preference where Hanover used its special position against the debtor to improve its position and secure itself in violation of Section 547 of the Bankruptcy Code. There's no dispute that the elements of an avoidable preference under Section 547 of the Bankruptcy Code are met here, but I will review them briefly. Was there a transfer of the property of the debtor? Yes, there was. $1.375 million was transferred from the bank account of the debtor to SunTrust to fund a letter of credit for the benefit of Hanover.
Well, but both the bankruptcy court and the district court said that the earmarking defense and the new value defenses applied. So why don't you tell us why those courts are wrong? Because that's the thrust of your case.
That's correct, Your Honor. Let's turn to earmarking first. Earmarking is a court-generated exception to Section 547. It's not among the enumerated defenses. The courts have established earmarking to account for situations where one party advances funds to another with the requirement that the debtor use the funds advanced to pay another debt.
In effect, that's a novation.
I don't think of it as novation, Your Honor, but...
Well, if the debtor owes Judge Traxler a dollar, and for whatever reason, it's important that that debt be extinguished, and so on behalf of the debtor, I pay Judge Traxler his dollar. Now the debtor owes me one. The estate hasn't been changed. You've simply moved from one creditor to the other. To me, that's the classic definition of earmarking.
And, Your Honor, I would agree with that, very much so. In fact, that is very much what this court decided under the Bankruptcy Act in the Decker or the Virginia National Bank versus Woodson case. And in fact, those are not the facts that we have here. In the hypothetical you posit, you pay Judge Traxler directly the $1, the money never coming into the debtor's general estate. The debtor had no control over it, had no potential to use the money for anything other than to pay Judge Traxler his dollar. Now, you're right, there's a substitution of creditors here. Judge Traxler was a creditor of my debtor, and now you are, and it's the same dollar. And from a bankruptcy point of view, as a Chapter 7 trustee, we don't care. We'll pay you a dividend as well as we'll pay Judge Traxler a dividend if we're able to liquidate any assets. Now, in this case, though, that's not what happened. What happened was the money came in from Prospect Capital, and it was a loan of $1.575 million in two installments. They came in, one of the loans was in the debtor's bank account for approximately 8 days before the transfer was made to SunTrust. The other loan came in on the day the transfer was made. But here, to continue with your hypothetical, you loaned me money. I put it in my bank account, and then some days later, I write a check to Judge Traxler for his dollar. Now, during that time, when you loaned the money to me, the money was in my possession, my control, and I could have spent it on a myriad of things. In fact, the credit agreement between the debtor and Prospect Capital in Section 2.5 allowed for a wide range of uses for the funds, it wasn't everything, but the debtor had almost unfettered use of this money. Now, if the money, so as the money came into me, I had control over it, but there's another key element here that your hypothetical does not address, and that's whether there was an agreement to pay Judge Traxler his dollar.
So the question is whether or not you have the flexibility to prefer to pay that dollar to me or pay it to another creditor.
That's correct.
Like Judge Wilkinson. Whether or not you have the control over it and the flexibility to decide who's going to get it.
That's correct, Your Honor. If Judge Agee had said, now I'm going to give you this dollar, debtor, but I want you, but the only reason I'm giving you this dollar is to pay Judge Traxler, then, and if you agree to that, sign this, let's agree to that right now. We'll presume there's no writing, but I'm going to give you a dollar. You've got to agree to pay Judge Traxler. I'll say, fine, I'll do that. So the dollar comes into me. I have it. It's in my bank account. And then I write a check to Judge Traxler for a dollar. Now, because I've made an agreement with you, and I would not have received that money but for my agreement to pay the money to Judge Traxler, the court's going to, there's no net loss to the bankruptcy estate. We deed swapped creditors. I've had the money. I paid it to Judge Traxler, but the money would not have come to, you would not have paid me the money unless I had previously agreed to pay Judge Traxler. So
I'll ask opposing counsel the same question, because this, to me, seems to perhaps the salient fact on the earmarking defense. And that is, as I understand those cases and the general concept, for earmarking to apply, there has to be an antecedent debt.
In my
hypothetical, there already had to be an existing debt to Judge Traxler. So I assume your argument here is that there was no antecedent debt for which there was a novation for the $1.375 million.
No, sir, there is an antecedent debt. And there has to be an antecedent debt, Your Honor, in order for there to be a preference under Section 547. And the antecedent debt we have here is there were two sets of bonds issued by a Hanover. One set was issued in 2006, and they were approximately $2 million in change. And then in 2007, the debtor came up and said, we need some more bonding capacity. And that's when Hanover came in and said, okay, we'll give you some more bonds to run these government contracts, but you've got to give us some security for these bonds. Now, what happened? In the letter of credit agreement, it said that if you post security, that this letter of credit will stand as security for all debts of ESA to Hanover. And so where's the antecedent debt here? The antecedent debt, Your Honor, is the 2006 bonds. 2006 bonds were in existence. ESA had executed an indemnity agreement that said, Hanover, if you pay on the bonds, this is pretty common stuff, you pay on the bonds, we're going to pay you back. So
is the flaw here then for the earmarking defense in your view that after the transaction is done, there's not one debt, there are two debts?
That's correct. Just because money comes in, money is loaned to the debtor, and then that money goes out to pay a creditor, that does not mean there's a substitution of creditors, because the money came into ESA for its purposes, and then it went to Hanover, and eventually paid Hanover. Now, but what happened was that earmarking will not apply because that money, the earmarking defense says it would not, if the money would not have come into ESA's estate unless it agreed to pay the antecedent debt. Here, it came into ESA's estate, and it was used to secure the antecedent debt, which is the preference. And because the money came in with no strings attached and was not required to be paid to the antecedent debt, then earmarking would not apply. I think the key is the agreement.
Can the same transaction support both an earmarking defense and a new value defense?
No, Your Honor, it cannot. I've practiced bankruptcy law for 30 years, and well, 25, I guess, to be correct, but I can't get my head around how we can have both an earmarking defense and a new value defense. Earmarking looks backwards. In earmarking, we're taking money from the debtor. Money comes into the debtor, and it's used to pay an antecedent debt. That's critical. It's got to go to an antecedent debt. In new value, we're looking forward. We're getting money in, and we're getting some new value at a substantially contemporaneously, at a substantially contemporaneously time that comes into the debtor, and that money is then insulates the payment to the creditor. Creditor takes money and gives a new asset to the estate. That way the estate's made whole. It's kind of the same thought as earmarking. So those two defenses, in my mind, are like matter and antimatter. You bring them together and they blow up, and they don't really...
That should segue you into your argument on the new value defense before your...
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I will just step nicely into that. And new value, in order for there to be new value, that new value is a defense, and it's an enumerated defense under Section 547, 547C1. And in order for there to be new value present, well, let's look at what 547C1 says. It says, to the extent that the transfer was intended to be a contemporaneous exchange for new value and was, in fact, substantially contemporaneous. Two things I want to illuminate here. One is, to the extent the transfer was intended to be a contemporaneous exchange for new value and then was, in fact, substantially contemporaneous. Extent is important here because Hanover has not proven the extent of the new value. They pointed to two areas of new value that this court might find as new value. One is the value of the bonds. Now, the bonds were issued in the amount of $7 million and some change, but these bonds were paid for by ESA. They wrote a check for the premium for $74,701. Now, they paid for the bonds. The money for their letter of credit, the 1.375, was separate above and over, separate apart and over and above the premium. So the bonds could not have been new value to ESA. And furthermore, what's the bond? The bond is an obligation of Hanover to pay a debt of ESA. And if Hanover pays the debt of ESA, what happens? ESA, pursuant to its indemnity agreement, is going to owe Hanover. It's going to owe Hanover whatever it pays. Is that an asset to ESA? I don't think so. And besides, whatever the asset was, ESA paid for it. Now,
what about the contracts?
The contracts. Thank you, Your Honor. I was going to go to that next. The contracts are not... Hanover has not proven that the contracts were new value. Hanover said that the bonds allowed ESA to get contracts from the government of $3.9 million. And that's true. But that's the gross amount that the contracts were for. If you add up the total dollar amount of each...
You've got this, the deposition that's in the record for summary judgment that you could earn revenues in excess of the $1.375 million.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the revenues would be the $3.9 million that the contracts were for. But I don't think it takes too much of a leap to realize that the gross revenues on these contracts, the $3.9 million, does not equal value to the debtor.
What about the gentleman from the debtor says that you could earn revenues over this $1.375 million amount? Both the bankruptcy court and the district court appeared to credit that, and I'm wondering what evidence there was that was presented below that contradicted that value.
Your Honor, there was no evidence in contradiction of that, but my argument here to this court this morning is that simply putting up a number, $3.9 million worth of gross revenue on contracts, cannot be evidence of the value of those contracts because there's obviously expenses associated with that.
Well, maybe that's the difference between the $3.9 million and the $1.375 million. The problem it looks like to me that you have here on the value issue, which obviously it's the Hanover's burden to prove that, but they put on some evidence here. It may not be very good evidence, but they put on some evidence. And I'm not finding in the record that was ever rebutted. So if there's uncontradicted evidence of the value, why would it be clearly erroneous for the courts below to have relied on that in finding new value?
Your Honor, I'm out of time. May I answer that question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Because it's just basic common sense will tell you that the gross value of the contract is not the total amount, the total value of the contract. ESA was in bankruptcy, had been losing money for years.
Isn't it a factual question whether the value, you know, was sufficiently quantified or not? Wasn't the district court correct in saying that the bankruptcy court's finding that it added new value to the estate would be subject to a clearly erroneous review?
Your Honor, I don't think that they proved their point, but if I might make one more comment on the new value, the other thing I highlighted was it had to be substantially contemporaneous. There's no evidence in this record that the money, that the $3.9 million to be paid by the government on these contracts, that new contracts came in, was substantially contemporaneous. That money was out there. It was out in the future.
Let me ask you one more question.
Yes, sir.
Did you didn't have an expert testify as to the value of the contracts. Did you ever depose Mr. Cole or examine him?
No, sir.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. You've got some time reserved, Mr. Schubert, for a reply. Mr. Esser.
Good morning. May it please the court. Will Esser on behalf of Appalee Hanover Insurance Company. There are three primary reasons why the bankruptcy court and the district court were correct in granting and affirming summary judgment in this case. Those three reasons are, number one, that the trustee in this case is simply an assignee and a surrogate for Prospect Capital. Number two, that there was no diminution of the estate and all of the funds which were transferred were funds of Prospect Capital. And number three, there was no contradictory evidence presented by the trustee with regard to the new value issue. With regard to the first issue about the trustee being an assignee in this case, it is a very important distinction, and I'd like to spend a bit of time on that. The trustee, Mr. Shuford referred to this as a classic preference case. I would say to the court that it is anything but a classic preference case. It is a very unusual case, and that is because in an ordinary garden variety preference case, a trustee comes forward on behalf of all creditors to pursue a claim, preference claim, on behalf of the estate. In this case, however, the only reason that the trustee has any standing is because he received an assignment of this claim from Prospect Capital to pursue. As an assignee, he stands in the shoes of Prospect Capital and is subject to all of the same defenses which could be raised against Prospect Capital. Now, you didn't really hear the trustee talk too much about the facts of what happened in the bankruptcy case, and I need to tell your honors specifically about how it was that Prospect Capital became the owner of these preference claims. What happened was that Prospect Capital came into the bankruptcy court and asked the court to approve a sale of all of the assets of ESA, including allowing Prospect Capital to take over, to assume all of these government jobs, and it promised the court a number of things. At the sale hearing, Hanover objected. In response to Hanover's objection, and I can say that the reason Hanover objected is because Hanover wanted to go ahead and start completing the jobs itself. Prospect Capital did not want that. It wanted to do the jobs. And the reasons it gave to the court and the promises that it gave to the bankruptcy court were as follows. It said first that it would assume the jobs and it would pay $200,000 to subcontractors who were owed money, which would reduce Hanover's exposure on payment bond claims. Second, Prospect promised the court that it would infuse $800,000 towards getting these jobs done, and also represented to the court that it had plenty of capital to make sure the jobs were completed. Third, and most importantly with regard to Hanover, Prospect specifically said to the court that Hanover could hold all $1.4 million to protect itself in case Prospect didn't do the jobs. And I quote from the record from Prospect's capital, Prospect's attorney, "Now, Judge, if you think that's not enough, what if I would have come in here today and said on top of that, Judge, I'm going to give Hanover $1.4 million that they can hold to protect themselves in case they ever have to go out of pocket here. I mean, that should carry the day. Well, that's what we have, okay?"
Is this assignment argument in the bankruptcy court or the district court?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
The argument that you're making now, was this raised by you in the bankruptcy court or the district court?
The fact that Prospect Capital was an assignee, or excuse me, the trustee was standing in the shoes as an assignee?
Well, you're trying to defeat the claim that the trustee is bringing here. What I'm asking you is, did you make this claim, in effect, did you make this defense against his claim in the lower courts?
In the district court, I did make the argument, Your Honor. Where there was no oral argument, it was in the briefs. The district court briefs are not contained here in the joint appendix. But yes, that argument was made. And in the bankruptcy court, Your Honor, I argued that the trustee was in fact judicially estopped by the actions of Prospect Counsel. Excuse me, by Prospect.
Can I ask you a question? There seemed to be, you can affirm a district court on a number of grounds. There seemed to be a number of possible grounds here. And the question is, which is the simplest and the most straightforward. Now, one basis would be a new value defense. The district court declined to avoid the transfer as a preferential transfer. And it seems one of the reasons among several that he declined to avoid the transfer as a preference had to do with the fact that the transfer had added new value to the estate. That's a defense, and you would obviously bear the burden. They say you didn't sufficiently quantify the whole new value concept, that you just airbrushed it and went on it at too general a level. So you bear the burden on it, but also this is it's a clear error standard of review, at least I think it is. Tell me why you think you carried your burden in establishing the new value defense.
If I can take that in two parts, Your Honor. With regard to, I think...
There's a lot of underbrush here in this case. I'm trying to see if there's a way to distill it and simplify it.
Yes. Breaking it into two parts, Your Honor, I think the first portion of your question was what would be the simplest way to affirm this case. And the simplest way to do so would be the bankruptcy court gave three reasons for its holding, independent reasons, earmarking new value and equitable reasons. The court didn't specifically call it estoppel, but that was what we had argued, was that it was an estoppel argument. I believe that the equitable grounds are the easiest ones. For upholding this. And the reason for that is because this court applies an abusive discretion standard with regard to summary judgment granted upon equitable estoppel or judicial estoppel grounds. And we had a specific situation where Prospect Capital became the owner of the claims by promising the bankruptcy court that Hanover could hold these funds
to protect itself. I understand all that, the idea that it would be a windfall and that Hanover was the ones that made good on the performance bonds and allowed the contracts to proceed and be executed. But why is that necessarily? I mean, I understand that. But I'm not sure what the extent of equitable defenses is in this context. Why do you shy away from the new value?
I don't, Your Honor. I'd be happy.
Why isn't that a simpler way than trying to go at it through an equitable?
Your Honor, I was simply think that the reason I was addressing the equitable one first had to do with the standard of review and the relative burdens involved.
There's a clear error standard of review on some of these other things, particularly the question of whether the new value had been sufficiently quantified.
Well, why don't you tell us about the new value defense? That's Judge Wilkinson keeps asking you about that.
Be happy to.
I don't understand why you're avoiding my question.
Oh,
You must not have the kind of confidence in this thing, and if you don't, I'll hear from the opposing counsel why it's leaky.
Oh, no, Your Honor. I'm happy to address it. Your question was two parts. I was trying to get to both of it. Your Honor, with regard to new value, I absolutely agree with you. The only evidence which was presented below to the court was evidence presented by Hanover on the issue of new value. That evidence came in the form of the $8 million worth of bonds, in the form of the $4 million worth of government contracts, and in the unopposed affidavit testimony that these jobs would allow the ESA to earn more than $1.4 million. There is one other item which, in fact...
Was that evidence ever contradicted?
There is no evidence to contradict it, Your Honor.
Okay, well, I mean, they put on the evidence. They have the burden of establishing the defense. They put it on. The drafters of the bankruptcy code pretty clearly wanted creditors to be able to deal with debtors and if they're in trouble situations and trouble circumstances, to keep them going. And ESA would seem to be the kind of person, or at least the bankruptcy court could see it as the kind of debtor that warranted this sort of dealing. And the Hanover was making it possible for ESA to struggle along.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. And I think the other item which the court can't lose sight of,
you don't want somebody whom you help in this situation to later, you know, have any transfer to you voided as a preference.
You're exactly right, Your Honor. That's what all of the courts say is the primary grounds for the new value defense. And I would also point out to the court that the trustee actually makes a very good case in his reply brief for an additional element of new value as it relates to the funds which remain unspent when the jobs are completed. The evidence before the bankruptcy court was, even at that time, there were still $500,000 to $600,000 of funds that Hanover was holding that hadn't been spent that would be reverted back to Prospect regardless. And in the reply brief, the trustee says, both parties expected ESA to perform its contracts and for the entire value of the Hanover letter of credit to revert to ESA upon completion of the contracts. So the only thing that needed to take place here was that for Prospect or ESA to finish the jobs, and all of this $1.4 million was available to them. This wasn't a situation in which Hanover was going to do a cash grab and somehow come out better than it otherwise was entitled to.
But wasn't that $1.4 million not going to become available to ESA until a substantial time later?
It was going to become available to ESA after completion of the jobs, Your Honor.
Which would be a substantially longer period of time.
Correct. It was sitting in a certificate of deposit earning interest. And all of the funds in that certificate of deposit were not ordinary working capital of ESA. They were money which came from Prospect Capital for the very specific purpose of putting them into that certificate of deposit.
Okay. Go ahead.
So as to the $1.4 million, is it your position that you all get to keep all of that?
Your Honor, absolutely not. It is our position that Hanover has now completed the jobs, is holding somewhere between $500,000 to $600,000, and upon resolution of this litigation is ready to pay that money back over to either Prospect or the trustee. And that has been the position since the summary judgment hearing. Now, the reason it hasn't been paid back is because Prospect and the trustees say, no, we don't just want the $500,000 to $600,000 of excess proceeds which are left over. We want to get the full $1.4 million, including all the amounts you had to spend to complete the jobs that we were supposed to do ourselves. Unless the court has any questions on the earmarking defense, that's all I have at this time.
Okay, I think we understand your position.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Mr. Shuford, you have some time and reply.
As I understand what counsel's just told us, you've had a pretty good day's work. You're going to get $500,000 or $600,000 back.
Your Honor, there is plenty of money left over in these contracts. And that's one thing that struck me as I was sitting here listening to Mr. Esser argue was Hanover keeps talking about their exposure and all these. They had no exposure. They had the money. And Your Honor, the preference here is not all the money. Nobody ever said that. The preference, Your Honor, is the amount that was secured on the old bonds, the 2006 bonds. That's the preference. Now, I think a couple of things about their new value defense that the court is focused on. If we look at United Rentals versus Angel, this court's decision in 2010, the court said that the party against whom recovery or avoidance is sought bears the burden of proving a 547C defense, and that party failed to establish the precise benefit received by the debtor. Now, Mr. Esser has said that there were $4 million worth of government contracts. Agreed. But has he established the precise benefit that was received by the debtor? And I would argue that under the United Rental versus Angel case, he has not. But more importantly,
shouldn't you have raised that point, though, in the district court or the bankruptcy court and put on some evidence?
Your Honor, it's his burden to prove his defense. He did not carry this
affidavit in, right or wrong, and the man said that they could earn the $1.375 million. So that's admissible. I mean, you're not challenging that on the basis that it was an inadmissible affidavit, and you didn't put on any evidence to rebut it. So, under the clearly erroneous standard, how do you prevail now?
Your Honor, if the court wants to accept that as the value to the debtor, then there is another missing piece.
It's not a matter of us accepting it. The district court and the bankruptcy court made findings of fact, and they had something in the record to back it up. Whether or not we agree with it or not really doesn't make any difference under the standard of review.
Yes. However, there's another missing piece from Mr. Esser's, from Hanover's argument, and that is the substantially contemporaneous. The contracts were awarded and given to ESA when ESA was able to deliver the bonds from Hanover to the government. Okay, we've got $4 million worth of contracts. What do we have? As a trustee, what can I do with those contracts? Is that value that I can grab and take from my creditors and pay the body of creditors? Your Honor, it's not. It's not value until the contracts are performed and the money comes in. And the money, the fruit of those contracts was off in the future. It was not substantially contemporaneous. The contracts came in, and one wise one could say that is substantially contemporaneous. But the fruit of those contracts did not come in contemporaneously. It was out there. And that's, in bankruptcy, we're looking at the money. Show me the money. And that's the trustee's job, which I've done for years, Your Honors, is to find money to pay these creditors. And those contracts did not constitute a pool of cash that the trustee could access and pay creditors. The money went out the door to Hanover, and the contracts were not a substantially contemporaneous exchange of value. The contracts themselves may have had value.
The court made a finding of fact to the contrary. In fact, they said the bankruptcy court noted that the trustee did not present evidence contesting the fact that the exchange was a contemporaneous exchange for new value.
Your Honor, I don't know how the court can find that to be. I think that is clearly erroneous in this context.
All right.
The value did not come in until the contracts were executed and performed.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll come down and greet counsel and then go into the last.